Oh, you mean me? I got so into the habit of listening, I totally forgot that I was on next. But I want to tell Stephen and Nancy that I really enjoyed being in the living room with them. And I enjoyed seeing Stuart Little after all of this time. That was a lot of fun. So thank you. And yeah, we're here for I Am That. I'm not just here to listen. So we are in message 16, which is called Desirelessness, the Highest Bliss. But I've been on this, this is a fairly long message. I've been on this message for a few weeks. In fact, I accidentally taught the same section twice, which means we were here a little longer. But today I'm starting, if you have the book, I'm starting on page 47 with the second Q on the page. So this is what the questioner says. I do believe you. But when it comes to the actual finding of this inner self, I find it escapes me. And in fact, I'm going to go ahead and read the quote above, you know, what Nisargadatta said just before the questioner says that. But it should sound pretty familiar to you if you're in gentle healing, because I actually just quoted this in a gentle healing tip just a couple days ago, maybe just yesterday. Nisargadatta had just said to the questioner, that which sees all this and the nothing too is the inner teacher. He alone is, all else only appears to be. And this is the part that I quoted in the tip. He is your own self, your hope and assurance of freedom. Find him and cling to him, and you will be saved and safe. And so that's when the questioner says, I do believe you. But when it comes to the actual finding of this inner self, I find it escapes me. And now Nisargadatta is sounding a lot like Ramana Maharshi, because he says, the idea, it escapes me. Where does it arise? And of course, those of you who are in gentle healing, you know this is exactly what inner Ramana is asking us to do right now. So like if the idea occurs, for example, like today Jacqueline said in her teaching, she said that Regina and everyone else can hear inner wisdom. But I can't, right? I'm like, yeah, Regina and everyone else, but not my beloved Jacqueline. But you know what inner Ramana is saying when we have thoughts like that is, you know, what is thinking this thought? Or, you know, where does this thought arise? As Nisargadatta is saying, to pause and notice that in that moment, we are listening to the mind. And remembering also that the mind, this mental chattering mind, is the ego. That means we are listening to the ego. We all know that the ego does not want awakening, right? Because that's the end of the ego. So it would make sense that the ego would say anything at all to make us believe we can't do it, right? That just makes perfect sense. If I can believe that I can't find my inner teacher, that I can't hear wisdom, but everybody else can, the ego wins. And so when this questioner says, I do believe you, but when it comes to the actual finding of this inner self, I find it escapes me. Nisargadatta said, the idea, it escapes me. Where does it arise? And the questioner says, in the mind. And then Nisargadatta says, and who knows the mind? Now, this is a lot. In fact, it really is the same as in Inner Ramana recently. I think you guys have read this message. Maybe not. Maybe I'm, because you know, I'm a week ahead of you. So maybe you haven't read it yet. Maybe it's coming up for you. Have you read the message of self-inquiry yet? It's like, it's a little S and a capital S, self-inquiry. I don't know if you guys have read that yet. I think maybe I've read it and written a tip, but you haven't yet gotten to it yet. But the message about little S and capital S self-inquiry in the teachings of Inner Ramana, it's teaching exactly what Nisargadatta is doing right here. It's teaching that first, you know, when the thought arises, but I can't find my inner teacher. I know other people are good at it, but I can't find my inner teacher. The first thing you do is look, where is that thought coming from? And you notice it's the mind. The mind is having that thought. That's little s, self-inquiry. After you see that the mind is what has that thought, you then practice capital S self-inquiry, which is noticing what you actually are. So again, what I would do is I would, you know, I have the thought, for example, I can't hear inner wisdom. Other people can, but I can't. Okay. The first thing I do is, where is that thought coming from? Or what has that thought? You know, and I notice, okay, that thought is in the mind. Then I ask, well, what am I? And when I ask, what am I turn my attention to notice awareness, as awareness, to notice myself as not the mind, right? Because again, as you guys know, the problem is right now that we have this addictive belief that we are the mind. If this is the mind and this is awareness, through attention, we are projecting our awareness into the mind, and we become so intertwined with the mind that we think we are the mind. So when the mind says, I can't hear inner wisdom, we think, what I am, can't hear inner wisdom, but that's because of this relationship. So the first thing we do with little s and capital S self-inquiry, with little s self-inquiry, the first thing we do is we kind of pull back enough to see, where is that thought that I can't hear inner wisdom? Where is that thought? Where does that arise? I notice, oh, that's in the mind. By looking at that and seeing that's in the mind, I am now less attached than I was a moment ago. And then I ask the question, what am I? And when I ask the question, what am I? It's like I turn around and I look at myself. And now I notice that I am awareness. See, the mind is way over here. And I'm looking in the other direction now and noticing myself. So first, I'm believing the thought. I can't hear inner wisdom. Then I step back a bit and I say, where does that thought arise? Oh, look, that thought's in the mind. And then I ask, what am I? And I notice, oh, I'm awareness, right? That's the practice of little s and capital S self-inquiry. But right here, Nisargadatta is teaching the same thing. He says, the idea, it escapes me. Where does it arise? The questioner says, in the mind. The Nisargadatta says, and who knows the mind? This is just another question that's getting him to notice that he's the watcher or the observer or the awareness, not the mind. And in fact, the questioner says, the witness of the mind knows the mind. And then Nisargadatta says, did anybody come to you and say, I am the witness of your mind? And the questioner says, of course not. He would have been just another idea in the mind. And Nisargadatta says, then who is the witness? And the questioner says, I am. And this is really important because sometimes when we talk about spiritual concepts, we talk about spiritual concepts in an impersonal way that allows us to avoid the realization that we're talking about ourselves. And what I mean by that, for example, is if I say the observer is aware of the mind, that can be at the conceptual level only. And I can still not be seeing that what I am is that observer, right? I'm just... You know, I've heard, well, the observer knows, you know, I mean, I've read books, I've listened to Rupert Spira, I know the answer to this, it's the observer that sees the mind. But there's no insight, there's no realization in that, right? So Nisargadatta takes him a little further. I mean, again, in his kind of smart-ass way, you know, we all know Nisargadatta was a smart-ass, right? So in his kind of smart-ass way, he says, did anybody come to you and say, I am the witness of your mind? The questioner says, of course not, you know. And then Nisargadatta says, then who is the witness? And he says, I am, right? I am, right? I am that which observes, I am that which observes the mind. If I am that which observes the mind, I can't be the mind. I'm over here, right? I am that which sees the mind. I am that which observes the mind. And that's a really important realization, because if the mind is the one that's saying, I can't hear inner wisdom, but I'm not the mind, I'm awareness, it means the mind isn't talking about me. Right? The mind isn't talking about me. It isn't speaking for me. It isn't speaking about me. I don't need to believe it. That's a really important realization. And so Nisargadatta says, so you know the witness because you are the witness. You need not see the witness in front of you. Here again, to be is to know. And I told you all before that this is that's my favorite Nisargadatta quote, to be is to know. But what he's saying here is, in order to know yourself, you need to continually break this attachment to mind and notice yourself. Be aware that you are aware. Be aware that you are the observer. Be aware that you see the mind, therefore you can't be the mind. And the more you become aware of yourself as the awareness or as the observer, the more you know your true self. Because that is your true self, right? So you know the witness because you are the witness. You need not see the witness in front of you. Here again, to be is to know. And the questioner says, yes, I see that I am the witness, the awareness itself. But in what way does it profit me? That's an interesting question. In what way does it profit me? You know, only the ego could ask that question. In what way does it profit me? What do I get out of being awareness? You know, I mean, I can see what I get out of going to work every day. I get paid. You know, I can see what I get out of getting married and having children. I leave behind a legacy. But what the heck do I get out of being awareness, right? Interesting question. And Nisargadatta feels the same way I do, because Nisargadatta says it has an exclamation point. What a question. So it sounds like it hit Nisargadatta the same way. What a question. What kind of profit do you expect? To know what you are, is it not good enough? You know, I mean, that's just, it's a total egoic question. It might have been helpful to say to this person, and where does that question arise? Right? Let that person look. And again, because now the person is back here, believing it again, back here attached to the mind, believing again. Well, how does this profit me? You know, what do I get out of this? Where does that thought arise? Where does that question arise? How does this profit me? In the mind. And what are you? Oh, yeah, I'm the observer of the mind, right? You know, and just keep bringing it back to that self-inquiry so that you can see that you are not the mind. Now, I can give a bit of an answer. How does this profit you? Well, the mind is the cause of all your misery, right? So seeing that you're not the mind, the profit is joy. The profit is love. The profit is peace. Right? Because the mind is the cause of all of your suffering. But again, it's a funny question. You know, it hit me in Nisargadatta the same way. It's like, oh my goodness, there he is, right back attached to the ego, just like that, you know? Nanosecond he wasn't, but phew, went right back to it again. So again, Nisargadatta says, what a question. What kind of profit do you expect? To know what you are, is it not good enough? And here we have the questioner, very attached to the mind. What are the uses of self-knowledge? Nisargadatta says, it helps you to understand what you are not. and keeps you free from false ideas, desires, and actions, which is just another way of saying what I said just a moment ago. The real profit is, you see, you're not the mind. And the mind is the cause of all of your suffering, right? So until you see you're not the mind, you're going to suffer. I mean, you're going to have good days, of course. You know, nearly everybody has good days. Not everyone, unfortunately. But nearly everyone has good days. But there are also bad days. And within any day, there's good moments and bad moments, right? The mind is always fluctuating. You can be perfectly happy one minute and then get an email and the whole world crashes down, right? And so when you know what you are, then you also know you're not the mind. And therefore, you don't need to believe all of the mind's thoughts. And again, you can be joyous. You can be happy. You can be love. You can't be those things as long as you believe you are the mind. So again, the questioner asks, what are the uses of self-knowledge? And Nisargadatta says, it helps you to understand what you are not and keeps you free from false ideas, desires, and actions. That's interesting too. Not only false ideas and desires, but also false actions. A lot of pain comes from people who believe the mind and act from it. You know, just when I was getting ready to come into Zoom a moment ago to listen to Nancy and Stephen, you know, the first thing that pops up when I start the internet is the news. And I happened to notice there was a little 13-year-old girl kidnapped from North Carolina a month ago. And I guess, you know, they found her body, right? She's been raped and murdered, you know? That's what happens when people believe the mind. Right? The person who did this. That's what happens when you believe the mind. All this suffering, everything, you name it, it comes from someone believing the mind. So it's not only just the false ideas and the false desires, but the false actions. They all come from believing the mind. And when we see what we are, none of those things are necessary. I mean, literally, although this sounds pretty far stretched, literally, if someone is the type of person that has, you know, rape thoughts come into the mind, if they are verging on self-realization, they can have this thought to rape and they can say, that's not me, right? That's not what I am, and not need to follow up on that thought. I mean, that's the profit. Right? That's the profit of knowing who you are, is you don't have to believe the mind. You don't have to get upset at your wife or your children or your husband or your parents or your boss. You don't have to be annoyed by your neighbors. You don't have to be frustrated by the work around the house that isn't done yet. Right? You get to be free. So again, what are the uses of self-knowledge? It helps you to understand what you are not and keeps you free from false ideas, desires, and actions. The questioner says, if I am the witness only, what do right and wrong matter? That's an interesting question. You know, I mean, let's imagine that I'm a non-dual student, happen to be a neighbor to the family who just lost their 13-year-old daughter to rape and murder. And I say, you know, none of it really matters. We're just the observer. You know, that thought, that following through of that thought, that's just as much ego as anything else. And the way you can tell is by the pain you just caused someone else in saying it. I mean, we all know that's going to hurt them, right? If I say that, it doesn't really matter. We're just the observer of this. And they just lost their 13-year-old daughter in such a violent way. These kinds of questions still come from total attachment to the mind. I remember Ramana Maharshi saying to someone once that if you realize the self, the only thing that follows is good. When you realize the self, the only thing that follows is good. all of the bad, all of the evil, you know, that falls away because that was purely ego. So let's see what Nisargadatta says to this thinking. If I am the witness only, what do right and wrong matter? Nisargadatta says, what helps you to know yourself is right. What prevents it is wrong. To know one's real self is bliss. To forget is sorrow. So I think he's saying in a different way the same thing, that all of what we would call wrong is coming from the ego, is coming from the mind, is coming from you not knowing yourself and believing those thoughts, right? And when that is broken, then only good can come. It's, you know, it's funny because the mind, again, trying to understand spirituality, the mind gets confused. Like we talk about, judgment being a big part of the problem, you know, maybe the core part of the problem, judging good and bad. And yet we turn right around and say, well, the bad comes from the ego. But there's a way of seeing right and wrong without judging it. I don't know how to explain that, but at some point each one will reach the experience and then you know. I mean, you can see the pain and the suffering caused by kidnapping, raping, and murdering a child. And you know that's wrong. But you don't have to have any judgment against it at the same time. It's just knowing. It's, you know, maybe another word instead of wrong might be unnecessary. Like that kind of suffering is not necessary. Humans do not have to live in their wrong minds. There is another way. Right? And we could describe the unnecessary as wrong and the other way, there is another way, as right, you know, just using those words like wrong mind and right mind. But it's not judgmental. There's no judgment in it. It's wisdom. Only foolishness could say, because we're the observer, so what if a young girl is raped and murdered, or because this is illusion, so what? You know, that's the only foolishness can say that. So Nisargadatta says, what helps you to know yourself is right. What prevents it is wrong. To know one's self is bliss. To forget is sorrow. Right? Whether we call it sorrow, suffering, unnecessary, wrong. You know, I don't know what words you want to use, but it's caused by attachment to mind. It's caused by believing these thoughts are my thoughts. You know, whether they're thoughts, you know, like I just can't stand the way she talks so much, or whether they're thoughts like, I think I'm going to find me a young girl to kidnap and rape. They're not you either way. It's the mind. And when you see it's not you, then you don't have to act those thoughts out. You don't have to feel the emotions that come with those thoughts. You're free. The word that is used is liberation. You're liberated from the mind. The questioner says, is the witness consciousness the real self? And that's an interesting question because you guys are currently studying Inner Ramana, many of you are, so you know in Inner Ramana, in the tips anyway, I talk about three states of mind. the third of which really isn't a state of mind, but three states of mind. The first state of mind is deluded, right? The second state of mind we call self-realization or true perception. And then the third is awake. But when you're deluded, much of the teachings, almost all of the teachings, are pointing you to self-realization or true perception, which is the witnessing consciousness. That is the witnessing consciousness. It is not the final doorway. Because once you awaken to true perception, there's still awakening to reality. There's another level of awakening. So the answer to the question, is the witness consciousness the real self, is no. It's actually an intermediate an intermediate awakening. There is another awakening, which is reality. So Nisargadatta says, it is the reflection of the real in the mind. The real is beyond. The witness is the door through which you pass beyond. So you can see Nisargadatta is just as clear on these three levels: deluded, true perception, and reality, right? He's just as clear. He just described it perfectly. He says the witnessing consciousness is the reflection of the real in the mind. My eyes jumped. The real is beyond. The witness is the door through which you pass beyond. And those of you who are practicing awareness, watching awareness, or even if you've studied awareness, watching awareness, then you know that through awareness, watching awareness, we start off by watching what you could call your everyday human consciousness. And then you move back or fall back and you become aware of the witnessing consciousness. And it has a different, completely different quality than your everyday human consciousness. But then when you continue to watch the witnessing consciousness, you fall back again into infinite consciousness. It's almost like three levels of consciousness. Everyday human consciousness, which has a subject-object, it's subject-object consciousness. Witnessing consciousness, which is the observer. And then infinite consciousness, which knows only consciousness or only awareness, right? I have 1 minute left. So the questioner says, what is the purpose of meditation? And Nisargadatta says, seeing the faults as the faults is meditation. This must go on all the time, right? So in this moment, he's defining meditation as seeing the faults as faults. So sometimes he defines meditation differently. So this is the context of this conversation with this particular questioner. But what's interesting about that is he says, this must go on all the time. So we could say he's really recommending all the time practicing self-inquiry. Where did that thought arise? In the mind. What am I? Awareness. Learning to see the faults as faults, he calls meditation. And then he says, this must go on all the time. In other words, but he's recommending that you don't. You don't want to be connected into the mind, attached to the mind. Pull back. Where did that thought arise? See that it was the mind. What am I? See that I'm the witnessing consciousness. And then just go right back. If you go right back, you want to do that process of questioning again. You want to continually break the attachment to mind. And Inner Ramana says the same thing. Continually break that attachment to mind. And at some point, what happens is the attachment to mind snaps. It just snaps. It breaks. And this is when you awaken to true perception or self-realization, right? Or consciousness, or the second principle of God. So we're out of time. So that's where I will stop for today. And as far as I know right now, I'll be here next Wednesday I say as far as I know now, because I've heard a rumor there might be another flood meeting, but I don't know that for a fact. So we'll find out. Thanks you guys for hanging out with me, and have a wonderful evening. Bye.